So, good morning, BBC listeners. Good morning, Takeaway listeners. Hope you're enjoying our new streamlined morning schedule. Makes a lot of sense to me. Morning edition till 9, then the BBC on FM. The Takeaway, 6 to 10 on AM. It's a lot easier to keep track of than the old schedule, which had them bouncing back and forth between the two frequencies. And you have both choices now all morning. Good. So if you didn't know about the morning choices, those changes are now in effect. And welcome to both audiences on this State of the Union Day. You know, the Takeaway was collecting your six-word State of the Union addresses today. If President Obama himself could get away with a six-word State of the Union address, it would probably be jobs, 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 win war. That's it. Jobs, 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 win war. Unfortunately for him, the American people want to hear a little more detail than that. And maybe we'll get a lot more detail. For people who remember President Clinton's 1995 State of the Union address, the year after his health reform went completely up in flames, and he lost his majorities in both houses of Congress, not just one seat in Massachusetts, that year, people expected Clinton to come before the country with his tail between his legs and slink on and slink off. Well, don't you know, he spoke for 89 minutes. In 1995, basically an hour and a half, and people loved it. Anybody remember this? Journalists rolled their eyes and called it Castro-esque for being so long, but TV ratings showed that people stayed with pretty much the whole thing, and the Clinton comeback was underway. So who knows what we're in for tonight? And by the way, I'll be hosting a live online chat during the speech tonight, so you can hang out online and watch the speech or listen to the speech with your fellow WNYC listeners beginning right at 9 o'clock tonight. Hope you have to have you in on that. We're also doing that jointly with my counterpart in Los Angeles, Pat Morrison, who hosts a public radio show there. So a lot of her listeners will also be joining in to our online chat during the State of the Union at 9 o'clock tonight. But here are a few of the lines that President Obama will try to walk, apparently, in the State of the Union address tonight, since he has to say more than jobs, 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 win more. Spending more and spending less. That's such a big line. First, spending more. He'll reportedly announce several smallish programs and tax breaks for small businesses and middle-class families, including tax credits for new hires and elimination of capital gains taxes on investments in small businesses. Also, a bigger child care tax credit, automatic savings at work for some retirement programs, and caps on some student loan payments. Now, all of those things spread money around, but they would increase the federal deficit, or some of them would. So on the spending less side, he'll reportedly announce a three-year spending freeze on some big categories of domestic programs, from education to farm subsidies to air traffic control to national parks, some of the examples listed in the New York Times. Exempt from the freeze would be defense spending, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And the president will reportedly announce a commission to study ways to reduce the nation's $12 trillion debt to report back to him in December, something that Congress tried but failed to also create this week. Or to sum it all up in six words, cut, 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 spend, spend, study. Or tastes great, less filling, no really. So far, everyone seems to like this balance, except conservatives and liberals. So let's talk to Jackie Combs, New York Times White House correspondent, who's been reporting a lot of this, including the lead story in today's paper. Hi, Jackie. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning. Good to be back.
And let's start with the failure in the Senate of the Commission to Study Solutions to the Debt. It's really the current state of politics in a nutshell. Liberals and conservatives both had problems with it. The center is not holding. What happened here?
Well, you can't even get bipartisan agreement to study, put together a plan, despite, you know, even before you get to the big problems, the actual policy problems. What happened here is basically two things. Let's start from the fact that it did get a majority vote. 53 to 46 was the vote. But nowadays we have a Senate that only seems to operate on a supermajority, so it needed 60.
Somebody would have filibustered a commission to study solutions to the debt?
Absolutely, and that gets to the second point, which is the reasons that it didn't get 60 is because you had a critical mass of Republicans who are opposed to anything that might open the door to tax increases, And a lot of Democrats are opposed to anything that would open the door to further reducing Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. The problem is that there's not an expert out there who will tell you, and even some non-experts, who will tell you that you can reduce the deficits we have and the debt that is accumulating without taking on both the entitlement programs, that is Medicare and Medicaid especially, and raising some revenues. You just can't do it. We're promised, the public has been promised more things than it is paying for.
We are doomed if we can't look at a $12 trillion debt and not agree that we have to both raise revenues and cut expenditures. If both of those things are unacceptable, we're doomed.
Well, we are. I mean, it is a fact. But, you know, our government from its birth has always worked better under crisis, and that may be what it takes. The problem is, if we took action before the crisis, the steps you would need to take would be a lot less painful. For instance, I'm going to throw one out there, and it's not that I'm either for it or against it. I'm just going to throw it out. If you sort of gradually raise the retirement age for which people are eligible for Medicare and Social Security, which for Social Security is now a little over 66, working its way to 67, Medicare is 65. If you raise that a little and, say, did it over 20, 30 years so that it went up like a month at a time, you would save enough money to potentially put us on a fiscally sustainable path.
Right, which leads me to another question, because I was actually going to raise that same example. And my question is, do we really need a study commission at all? Isn't this the thing where everyone really knows what the options are? And I'll throw out a few more, because the one that you mentioned is definitely one of those that Social Security experts talk about. Increase the retirement age or eligibility age, or means test it, or adjust the cost of living increases to go up more slowly, or reduce Medicare reimbursements like would be in the health care bill, and then on some other realms of government, undo the Bush tax cuts on the top few percent or whatever. And we all know the pros and cons, but some grown-ups actually have to decide which is the least bad version of that, not necessarily come up with a new list.
Right.
Right?
Well, exactly. And I don't mean to single out, you know, cuts in the entitlement programs. For instance, there's a lot of good reasons that are raised against the things you and I have just talked about. Let's take the retirement age. For blue-collar people, for the kind of people I grew up with who are in labor-intensive jobs, by the time you get to 65, 62, you're ready to retire. So it would have to be a proposal that recognized that. But let's not leave off revenues. The fact of the matter is, not just long before President Obama came to office, you can go back to the 90s, even the 80s, we are a country that has consistently been spending at a level that's about 20% of the size of our economy, 20% plus or minus of gross domestic product, while we have been raising revenues at a level that's about 17 or 18% of gross domestic product. That 2 percentage point, or 3, and right now it's more like 8 because the revenues are 15% of GDP while spending is 22%, that is a gap that is the reason that year after year we have deficits.
Jackie Combs, New York Times White House correspondent, with us as we preview the State of the Union address and talk about the commission that the president will create by executive order to study solutions to the debt, because the Senate failed to do it. There was at least one scary thing, to me anyway, about the Senate version of this commission. We know this is not the scary thing. It would have included 8 Democrats and 8 Republicans, plus 2 appointees of the president. But it would have made a proposal that could not be amended, only voted up or down by Congress. Now, that is a lot of power for a commission to have, considering that it would have recommended these historic cuts to Social Security and Medicare, presumably as well as probable tax increases. Then Congress can't even change it in the usual Democratic process. I mean, maybe that's why neither side liked it so much.
Well, absolutely. And it is, you know, on the face of it, it is a really, as you say, scary thing to say that Congress has to take this or leave it. But, you know, they could leave it. And here's the argument for it. I'll be the devil's advocate for a straight up or down vote, no amendments.
Mm-hmm.
You would have this package, remember, as you said, would be put together by 8 lawmakers from each side and 2 administration officials. So it would come to the Congress from a panel of their peers, and it would be carefully balanced, presumably. And yesterday, during the Senate debate on this idea of having a bipartisan commission, the chief opponent of the commission was Senator Max Baucus, the Democrat from Montana, who is chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. His opposition was solely he didn't want to give up the power that Congress would have to amend, but he had an amendment to protect Social Security, and he called this whole idea of a commission a Social Security cutting machine. And that is, whether you agree with him or not, that is the level of sort of, I started to say demagoguery, but I didn't mean it in the pejorative sense, but that's the kind of thing that would come into play if you allowed them to amend it. And so it's, you know,
we could go around in circles on this and say, on the one hand, we're doomed because the normal democratic process in Congress can't get anything like this done.
Right.
On the other hand, it's scary to have a commission that's appointed, not elected, come up with solutions and force them into an up or down vote. And so, you know, I guess we have to fall off on one side or the other. Will the presidential version have the same power to, propose a version that cannot be altered, only voted up or down, as the congressionally created one would have?
Absolutely not, and that's the problem that some of its opponents cite. The problem is, you can only bind Congress to vote on something by a law that Congress passes, which is what we had before the Senate yesterday. The president is creating a commission by executive order. He can create the commission, and he can name people to serve on it, but he can't force the Republicans to even come to the table, and some of them are, threatening that they won't. Nor can he bind the Congress to vote on what its final product is. However, last week, the president and the Democratic leaders of Congress, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, and some of their lieutenants, got together and agreed that if the president sets up a commission, that the House and Senate leaders will put its product to a vote in December. Some people in the Senate, fiscal conservatives, aren't, totally trusting that Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, would do that, and they've asked her to put it in writing. But she's understandably a little peeved that, her word's not good enough. But that's if the president sets up a commission, I would put my money on it, get it coming to a vote.
An opponent of Obama, posting on our webpage, says, "For tonight, expect a lame theory of everything tonight, as Mr. Experience tries to tie the disparate parts of his agenda together in some coherent manner." So we'll see if that comes about. Anyone else can post your pre-actions to the State of the Union address at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Don't forget, we will have that live online chat during the State of the Union, so we can kind of hang out with each other and probably hundreds of your fellow listeners during the speech. Let's move on, and my guest is Jackie Combs from the New York Times in Washington. Let's move on to the three-year domestic spending freeze, also by executive order, for most things other than Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. What will this include most prominently?
Well, it will include just about everything that Americans think of as their government that's not, say, their Social Security check or the, Army and Navy. It'll include everything from air traffic controllers to national parks and science and research and subsidies to local schools. The thing of it is, it's not a freeze as we think of, or he's not proposing a freeze as we think of it in terms of all those programs will get frozen by, at their current levels. What he's doing is he's freezing the bottom line for that one-eighth of the budget that are these programs that get annual appropriations. He's freezing it at $447 billion a year for 3 years, or proposing to. But within that $447 billion, he will take, as he's put it, a scalpel. Some will get a lot of money, say some education programs. Others will be terminated altogether. So there's been a lot of criticism, especially from the left, that he's, from the right, both sides, I guess, as you said at the outset, he's getting it from both sides, that this is going back on his campaign statements when he opposed John McCain's proposal for an across-the-board spending freeze as being a meat axe approach and instead of a scalpel. And so you have these YouTube videos of President Obama saying he's against a freeze, the right saying, well, he was against a freeze before he was for it. No, it's pretty consistent. I think the White House screwed up, frankly, in using the word freeze because it opened the door to these YouTube videos. But what he's doing is just what he said in the campaign. He's using a scalpel, not a meat axe. And, you know, last year he did the same thing. He proposed a similar amount of domestic cuts and terminations, about $11.5 billion worth for 1 year. And he got, by the White House's count, about 60% of that.
So more comments from our webpage. Fabio in Montclair writes, on the budget freeze, if it is a tactic to pacify moderate Democrats and Republicans, I don't understand. I voted for principles, transparency, and forthrightness, not tactical politicking. And Sean in Brooklyn asks, when will reduced defense spending become a real option? And Jackie, this plays into the criticism that the president is getting really from both sides on the spending freeze.
Right.
Republicans knock it for being only 17% of the budget covered by it. So they say it's more of an image of discipline than actual discipline. And some liberals knock it because defense spending gets exempted while things like education get frozen. So is the president, is it, as Fabio calls it, tactical politicking, or is it principles and forthrightness that the president believes in?
You know, actually, it's both. And he, you know, he said in during the campaign that he would cut, you know, that he would scour the budget line by line. And while he's making a big deal of these, this so-called freeze for 3 years, like I said, he did the same thing last year, and he got, you know, most but not all of what he proposed by way of cuts and terminations. And so it's a both tactical, because the deficit is such a big issue, and it's principles. And I might say from the on the left, I've gotten lots of reader email, as you probably are there too, about from liberals who are mad that he's exempting defense spending from these from this freeze because we're in two wars right now. Well, it's interesting. When the White House, when we had the little meeting with some of the White House officials explaining this to us the other day, and someone asked, well, what makes you think you can get Congress to go along with some of these cuts? And they pointed to the example that last year they against the odds, won the cancellation of the F-22 contract. So here they've exempted defense, but their example for why they're going to succeed, why they can succeed against the odds here, is the fact they cut a defense contract. So there's a little, I think they, when they used that example, weren't quite thinking.
All right, we're going to have Anthony Weiner coming on in just a minute to react to some of this, and we'll get into the health care bill as well, which Weiner has been a leading voice on for all these months and many times on this show. So we'll get some reaction to the State of the Union proposals that are being leaked out on the economy and other things, as well as the state of the health care bill from Congressman Weiner from Brooklyn and Queens in just a minute. But Jackie Combs, New York Times national correspondent in Washington, before you go, how about a quick lightning round? Ready? Quick questions, quick answers, okay?
All right.
Will there be anything new for people facing foreclosure?
Yes. But I couldn't tell you the details, but they keep talking. It's just hard. It's easier said than done.
High dudgeon toward the banks or more restraint tonight?
It'll be a little high dudgeon.
Any new benefits for the long-term unemployed?
I'm not sure how much he'll talk about it, but there definitely will be, because you just cannot let, you know, there's bipartisan support for that.
Red tie, blue tie, or gold tie?
Oh, God, I'm in the print journalism business. I don't pay attention to ties very much.
Other than jobs and fight, what word might we hear the most woven into the speech tonight?
I'll use a phrase, middle class.
And the number of so-called ordinary Americans who he will point to sitting in the audience next to Michelle or a cabinet secretary?
I should know that. It would just be a guess. I'll say six.
All right, last one. I mentioned at the top that President Clinton, in that famous 1995 State of the Union, after his health reform went down, spoke for 89 minutes.
I was there.
Pick a number.
42.
Nice, tight 42-minute State of the Union from President Obama tonight. Predict, Jackie Combs, national correspondent for the New York Times in D.C. She has the lead story today on that debt reduction commission that went down in the Senate that we expect to hear an executive order version of announced by the president in the State of the Union address tonight. Jackie, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Congressman Wiener next.